Hi, I'm Dave Barnes.
And I'm John McLaughlin.
And welcome to Dadville.
Dadville is a podcast where we talk about life, love, and the pursuit of awesome dadding.
It's funny thoughts and deep talks.
So please, enjoy your time here in Dadville and enjoy this episode with...
Mac Powell.
Your facial follicle scenario is always inspiring.
Yeah. Thank you.
When was the last time that you were totally clean shaven?
I think it was in the fourth grade, maybe.
Yeah.
Fifth grade.
Which semester? I'm guessing first semester.
Oh, definitely the second one.
That is so good. That is
I'm a late bloomer, so it was definitely second.
The second semester. It
is the most robust. I think it, John, help me out here, but I think it's the most robust facial like hair situation we've had on. It's really substantial.
It might be. It's very nice. How much time are we spending like trimming that thing up and maintaining?
Zero.
You have a team of people that do that?
Yeah. It's, I had to not bring a keyboard player on this tour so that I could have.
Keys are the first to go. Yeah.
The barber had
to be. You have two aux perk players, but the keys guy has to go.
What I gotta do is find a barber that can play keys, and then I'll be fine.
Bro, listen, the way the music industry is going, that will 1,000%
just
will
find
be a thing.
Any barber in Nashville.
I get Steve Mason to play for me.
Steve could do it. Yeah, Steve would crush it. Soccer Moses himself. You know, the thing, I was reminded of this. I just got off opening for Lady A this last year. And Braggers. Something that I just don't, yeah, you're welcome. Something I never think about.
That was
about
a minute and a half.
To both y'all's points, like, you know, Hillary has glam people out. You know what I mean? I mean, the girls do numerous jobs. They're not just doing glam, but I just never, ever, ever think about that. Anytime I'm on the road, that's like, but I mean, they make them look good. Like those girls are like, it's like a whole thing.
So I'm out on the road right now. This is today is the official third day.
Hey, come on.
This tour. And I'm out with Natalie Grant and Danny Gokey. So there's a bunch of people on this tour and I haven't met most of them. I'm just assuming that not only Natalie, but Danny has somebody
just
doing makeup,
shushing them up.
They got to. They both look too pretty to not have somebody out.
you're just going from data at this point. You're like, from what I can tell, they're just way too good looking. Yeah, that would, John, don't you feel like that would satiate a little bit of the anxiety of being on the road?
Just having a glam person?
Well, just like before you walked out.
It's fine, satiate.
Siri's not going to tell you. But like, wouldn't it make you feel better just like that last check? Like right before you walk out, somebody's like, I'm here, kind of.
Yeah, I will say all I need is just somebody in that last moment just to make sure something's not coming out of my nose. That's the whole thing. But I will say I've never had anybody, obviously, like on the road, a glam person on the road. But I do need help before the tour. I just need somebody to say like, hey, these three outfits, don't wear anything but these three outfits.
Yeah. That is something I say this a lot, but if I had like just incredible amounts of money, I would, the first thing I would spend it on would be someone that just picks out clothes for me. First thing that's assumed. First thing would be charity. Second would be glam.
Charity is your stylist.
We used to have a lot of God gave me you money. So where'd that go?
It's charity. Of it went to charity. The charities are my kids' scholarship funds, but it is charity all the same. It doesn't benefit me at all. But I would love that. So, Mac, as you guys can hear, you're thinking, I know that voice, everybody listening. And you imagine the beard. You put it all together and you go, is that Mac Powell that they're talking to? And that is where you are actually right, Dadville listeners. He is out.
You realize the people are not. See, we're seeing each other. We're looking at each other doing
this. They can't. They'll never see this.
So when you guys are talking about how great my beard looks, they have no idea.
That's why we say it, because then if we're wrong, they never know.
Powell.com.
ever the salesman. Ever the salesman.
I was Googling some photos of you, and I mean, they can just Google Mac Powell, and some great shots will come up. I did that today, as I do most days. Today, we just happen to be interviewing you.
Typically, Google or Bing, if you want.
Or Bing.
Wow.
And you know.
Bing. That is, Bing it. That is such a wow. I'm still reeling from that call out.
Doesn't Bing it sound better than Google it? Bing it.
It does, yeah. Bing it. Yeah. Yeah, I have a lot of thoughts about that. Okay, so Mac, we always start with the brag sheet. You know, just getting to know you. So this is you got some things in here, man. This is
no joke. Okay. You on Wikipedia?
We're on Bing, actually. I just typed your name in. We're seeing a lot of beard stuff.
We just typed in Google and Bing, and these things came up.
Okay, so formed third day in 91, along with Mark Lee. Van was inducted into the Georgia Music Hall of Fame in 2009. And I'm being serious when I say this. That is no joke. Georgia, that is a significant state for musical output.
Yeah.
In fact, one of my favorite things, usually on my Christmas tour, I play the, oh my gosh, of course I forget it right now. Downtown Atlanta. Shoot, there's a theater there. Okay, that was mean. It's smaller than that. I can't believe I forgot it.
Oh, Georgia Dome.
No. Okay, stop, John. You can't say anymore. One of the things that they have on the wall in this theater that I play that I'm so embarrassed I can't remember right now is a really cool Fox theater. No, stop doing that. All of them are smaller. It's small. Why do you guys do that? That is so mean.
Two nights at the Fox Theater.
But one of the things that this place has, I'm going to think of it later, is this really cool. Somebody made it. It's the outline of Georgia. And it's so cool because it just has all of the names of like Georgia's famous musicians. Yeah. And it is crazy. It's crazy. Yeah. So I'm digressing too much. Okay. So inducted into the Georgia Musical Hall of Fame 2009, sold over 7 million records, 28 number one songs on the Christian charts, won 4 Grammy Awards and 25 Dove Awards. We call that an aviary. The band appeared on The Tonight Show with Jay Leno, Late Show with Craig Ferguson in 2008. Third Day became the first Christian artist to embark, I didn't know this, on a USO tour performing for American troops in Iraq and Kuwait. That's so cool. Mm-hmm. Released your first self-titled solo album in 2012. Won 2002 Dove Award for Male Vocals of the Year. I've always said that about you, such dulcet tones. Collaborated with Steve Curtis Chapman, another Dadville alum, Brooks and Dunn, and Randy Travis. Fun facts, and this is really good right here. I'm coming in with a humdinger on this first one. Used to play in a band called Nuclear Hoedown.
That's right.
There's no pushback. Father of 5 kids. Mm-hmm. And the Third Day song, This Is Who I Am, was used in a NASCAR video game. And that's fun facts, folks. That's some fun facts. Okay.
I can see why we're still using the 7 million records sold, 4 grand. I can see that stuff. But some of those little facts in there, like, we still.
That's a shout out to our producer, Jason, who
was on the Jay Leno show. We find it all.
Yeah, listen. Nothing is safe. Okay, nothing.
Have you played the NASCAR video game?
5 times.
Yeah,
I never even played a NASCAR video game, so I don't. I think that was a made up one. I don't think that.
Yeah, we did. Well, nothing is going to beat Nuclear Hoedown. Also, it was a variety theater. Just so everybody knows, the Variety Playhouse. Variety. Okay, the Variety. Yeah. Variety.
By the way, Nuclear Hoedown is trademarked, so don't think about.
Okay, John. We can. That. We tried.
I already had like 5 different ideas for that. The merch was already done. It was like, boom.
The merch is the easiest thing that's ever happened. You just do designs the radioactive itself. Thing. You know, it's just that. And then like the faces of the people. Or the little.
We actually had a poster made. It was a fiddle that was with a nuclear, you know.
Explosion. Oh, yes, it was. Yes, it was. And that guy, whoever designed it, was like, wow, what am I doing with my life? How did these kids get my number? Okay, so I want to start here, and this is just me being really selfish, Mac. Third Day, I literally this morning I sat down and listened to the first few records. I'm not kidding. And I felt so many things listening to those. I felt like transported back to a time. I felt emotions. I started sweating. I grew half of a beard, which was just called to my face, and it happened.
Anger, sadness, same time.
Listen, everything, okay?
It was all the emotions.
But here's something that I really do want to know. You guys were, I mean, to me, that was absolutely the heyday of incredible Christian music. To me, I think nothing will touch that. And it really, for me, was the perfect time because I was born in 78. And so that was like kind of high school for me, kind of a couple last years of high school, and then most of college for me. And so, you know, seeing you guys come through either Nashville or, you know, all these bands come to MTSU or went to school, like I got to experience that at the perfect time. You know, like that was when it was all happening. Cause, and I mean, listen to those records, dude, the music is just so good. It's like, I sort of get a little sad in some ways because I'm like, man, that's when you could write songs and people, it, you know, it could be whatever you wanted to write about and people loved it and it got on the radio and all these things. Yeah. But like, what did, and again, this is a selfish question. What did it feel like being, I feel like you guys were one of those like 5 to 10 bands that were at the very tip of that spear. Mm-hmm. When, and could you feel that? Like, could you feel that as a band when y'all would play or put out music that it was like, this is a thing that is moving at a astronomical rate?
Yeah. You know, it's a great question. And I think the answer is a little bit of yes and a little bit of no at the same time. I think we always had like these dreams and these goals, these things that we thought we could do. But at the same time, it's funny because I remember thinking like once we started building up a little bit of fan base and making some music, I was like, man, we could be as big as Petra one day.
That is great.
That was like the goal.
That
was like the band, right?
Yeah.
And so that was like the big dream. Like we could do that. But at the same time, you know, it's having success is like winning the lottery. Mm. So for us, there was both that we know this could happen. We could do this, but it's probably not going to happen. So it's a yes and no. We were just always, man, just as I am now, even still, it was always like, I'm just glad to be here. You know, we were big fans of the music. And so to get to be able to play on stage with artists that we love, like Rich Mullins and Michael W. Smith, and Chapman, like to even be in a room with those guys. Even now, I just toured with Michael and Steven right at the kind of the end of 20 where COVID was like, we were doing these drive-in theater shows.
I remember this.
Oh yeah.
Drive up in their cars and, you know, could stay separated, but we could still do this, be on stage together and do a concert. And I've known those guys for 25, 30 years, been on tour with them many times, and still at whatever age I was then, back then was 47, 48 years old at the time. We're on stage the whole time together, singing each other's songs. I'm looking over to my left and I'm like, there's freaking Stephen Curtis Chapman.
Yeah.
Smith. And I would say that to him later on. I'm like the little kid that you pulled up on stage to sing and he never left. And they're like, shut up. But I really still feel that way. And I think that we always felt that way with Third Day. Like we were so happy to just be, you know, it was like to win a Dove Award was like the dream, but like it almost didn't matter. It was like we got to be there. Grammys. You know, we go to the Grammys and go, this is dumb that we get to be part of this.
Right. So, well, not just a part of it, but again, I think what's so cool about you guys, especially, is y'all were to me part of the engine of it, because I felt like, you know, and again, you guys were squarely in my biggest musical consumption phase. You know what you guys were doing along with some of those other Christian bands, and it's not just that y'all were part of it. I mean, y'all were like one of the, I feel like one of the people leading a certain offshoot of it, you know, because it's like all the biggest bands sort of had their own thing. That's why they all sort of worked in these different ways, you know. And I feel like you guys, like listening to the record this morning, I was like, I just love that it was as creative and as unique as it was. And it didn't feel, as much as I can hear your influences in awesome ways, in the ways you want them to be heard, it doesn't feel like a derivative of something. It feels like its own thing. And you guys are from Georgia and it's like everybody knew that and that was this cool thing. And you felt like, okay, so compared to DC Talk or Audio Adrenaline or somebody, it just felt like a different thing. It was like, it is a part of this, but it's very much honoring its own thing and not sort of trying to, you know, fold into this other thing.
Right.
And even it was funny too, because, you know, I got such a unbelievable, I mean, especially being 45, being in the industry so long, it was like hearing the sound quality change from record to record was amazing. It was like, you could, on that first record, which it sounds great, but it was like, it goes from that to like all of a sudden there's success. And then Conspiracy Number 5 suddenly just sounds like amazing and huge. And then even Time, you hear it, it's even better on that one. You know, it's like you can feel the industry sort of like catching up with itself, you know?
Oh, totally, totally. I mean, that first record came out in 1996, but it was already at that point, we had made it ourselves in 94. It got kind of repackaged by an indie label and added a couple songs, a remix, put out in 95, then Reunion Records, you know, did the same thing, repackaged it, put a couple new songs on it, remixed it, put out. So by the time the record came out, we were already sick of those songs.
Ready? Oh, I'm sure. Oh, yeah. And then here you go playing them for two more years.
Yeah, absolutely. But and I'm honestly, there's a lot of songs from that first record. I'll do like a request time in concert, mm-hmm. and like a lot of people mention songs from like three or four songs from that first record. I'm like, guys, I've made a lot of good music since then. Yeah. What are you asking for the stuff that I wrote when I was 18 years old?
I didn't know what I was doing. Isn't that crazy?
That's such a gift, though, for you guys to have the combination of being as crazy successful as you were throughout all those years, but still have that mindset of like, we're just happy to be here.
Oh,
I mean, I think that maybe a lot of people, some people don't never have that, you know, and some people start out with that, but then eventually, you know, they're like, well, by now, by the 24th Dove Award, it's like, well, yeah, we should get this Dove Award. And it like robs them of the enjoyment of the experience. You know, that's such a gift that you guys had that.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Now, part of it was being in a band, being with, you know, five of us together. And back to Dave, what you were talking about with the musical, you know, that you could hear our influences, but at the same time, it was our own thing. It was because all five of us had, I mean, there's definitely stuff that we listened to together that we loved, but we also brought something different to the table and what we liked and the way that we played our music and sang. And I think that blend, it was, I often think of it like a gumbo. It's like he brought this ingredient, I brought that, they brought this ingredient. And it just kind of makes its own unique thing. And I think that's what Third Day was. And I know that's true for every band, but for some reason, part of it also was that we just weren't these great musicians. I mean, we were really a glorified garage band, honestly. I'm not afraid to say that. We weren't these great musicians, but we played on our records. And so when we went in the studio, I was so surprised to find out that there were so many bands that they had studio musicians play on their records. That didn't make any sense to me. And we never used tracks live either. So it was kind of like, you're just going to get what you're going to get, the warts and all, the good and the bad with it. I think that was one of the things that made Third Day unique.
Dead Fish.
John.
Dave.
John.
Dave.
That was good.
Yeah.
You just had your family down here on Thanksgiving, right?
Indeed I did, Dave. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And you know what? Every time they come down here, one of the first things they want to hit is all the good coffee shops. But this time, I threw him a curveball. And you know how I throw curveballs.
Well, I've always called you Nolan Ryan. Did you go bar hopping instead? What was the option there? What are you doing?
It's funny, of course. No. I told him, hey guys, what if I tell you that the best coffee in town is right here in my kitchen?
And I'm sure they all gasped.
Emphatically. Mm. Yeah.
Yeah.
But you know what? I'm right.
You are. Yes, you are, John. Because you made them the sponsor of today's episode and my morning cup of joe. Let's sing it together. Methodical coffee.
I like how we started on the exact same note.
I know. I was really amazed by that. That's because we drank so much of it together. Methodical Coffee has craft coffee and tea for people of all kinds. Roasted, blended, brewed, served, and perfected by verified coffee and tea nerds.
T-lerds.
T-lerds is the combination of nerds and lovers. By the way, gotcha, that's what that is. Gotcha. T-lerds, like my friend Johnny here.
Thank you, Dave. And that's exactly right. And Methodical, it's not just the name of their business. It's their approach to everything.
That's right.
Methodical's been roasting and hosting for over 8 years and offers a wide selection of coffee and teas that are complex, yet easygoing, just like Dave Barnes.
Come on, I'm blushing. But the best of Methodical's coffees is our signature Dadville blend.
Dave, the Dadville blend is the fuel that gets me going every morning. Mm-hmm. It's the fuel that keeps me going, right? Okay. It's the fuel that makes me sleep because I know I get to wake up and drink it again the next morning.
I know.
Filled with hints of chocolate, graham, and brown sugar.
It's just like John McLaughlin. That's right. If you go to methodicalcoffee.com/Dadville, it takes you right to the Dadville signature blend. Mm. And don't you dare forget to enter our discount code Dadville.
Furious. You don't have to pay full price for this. Visit methodicalcoffee.com for more information and use the discount code Dadville for 10% off your first order. That's methodicalcoffee.com, and you better use that discount code Dadville.
Dadville.
Well, I think, again, I think that's what's so cool about what you guys were doing and why that time in Christian music was so cool, because that was celebrated. You know what I mean? Yeah. It wasn't something where people went, okay, let's put them in the meat grinder and shoot it out the other side for the product that we want. It was like, here are these guys. And honestly, I'm not kidding when I say this, Mac. I was so impressed knowing that listening now. Like going, wow, this actually, sure, there's some fun flubs, but listen to Beatles records. There's nothing but flubs.
Yeah, right.
So
right.
so to go, it's so cool that whoever, you know, y'all were working with production, whatever, it sounded like, you know, it's y'all playing. It's got so much character because of that, but it's y'all playing. And I was like, that's such a cool thing. So the other selfish question, music question I have, and then we'll move on to the bulk of the really incredible interview that we have prepared, is I thought about this too with God of Wonders. I mean, that was right after I got out of college. I don't know in my life as a Christian kid that there is a more ubiquitous song in the history of, like, it was everywhere. Like, I can't think.
Siri, define ubiquitous. I can't even say it. I can't even say the freaking word, much less know what it
is. John dared me to say two songs, and I just say two words, and I got them both in. But, you know, it just, you couldn't escape that song. It was literally everywhere. Did you feel that way? It was like your voice was everywhere.
Yeah, not at all. Because, well, first of all, I don't know who knows this and doesn't know it. That we didn't write that song. Mm-hmm. It was written by a guy named, or two guys. Well, actually, Mark, Steve Hindelong and Mark Bird wrote the song. And they were doing a project. Derry Daugherty and Steve Hindelong were in a band called The Choir. And I loved The Choir.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And I was just
old school Christian.
Yeah, old school. And I just loved their music. I want to say record. I had a tape of Circle Slide, which is one of their kind of their third record, I think. It was one of the first Christian, probably the first Christian record I ever heard.
Wow.
Well, I was so much a fan of theirs. And they had done a couple of worship things called At the Foot of the Cross. Years before I'd heard they were putting together this other thing called City on a Hill. And they said, hey, we want Third Day on a song. And the project's going to be a lot of different people singing on different songs together. They sent the song God of Wonders that Hindelong and Mark Bird had written. And they said, will you guys consider recording this? And I heard it and I thought it was okay. I was like, that's okay song. I said, do you have a City on a Hill song, because the record's called City on Hill? They said no. I said, I'm gonna write that. And in my mind, I'm like, this song's gonna be so much better than God of Wonders. It was not.
I mean, look
up that record and look at the streams, and City on a Hill was probably the least played song on the record. And also we wrote all our own stuff, so it was like, it was hard for me to. Every once in a while, we would find a song that we loved and we go, oh, we're going to do this song. But 99% of the stuff we did, we wrote. And so it was hard for me to want to record a song that I didn't write. And so anyway, they said, okay, you do your song. We're going to come to Atlanta. You guys can record it. My manager said, hey, look, they're going to try to get you to sing a verse on that God of Wonders song. He said, do not do it. You already have a song on the radio now. We got another song single coming out real soon. We don't want to get, you know, things to get kind of messy with too much stuff. So don't sing on that song. Go record your song, get out of the studio. I'm like, great. So we go in.
Get a run.
Yeah. We get it, go in. We record City on a Hill. I'm walking out. Steve Hindelong says, hey, Mac, will you go sing it? Will you sing a quick verse on this song, God of Wonders? I went, absolutely, yes. I couldn't say no to my
Come on, man.
Well, I thought I'll let them fight it out. I'll just do it, you know,
and
get it over with. And then my manager will tell him, no, you can't use the vocal. That'll be it. My manager got so mad that I had recorded on it, and then he heard it and he went, this is going to be a big hit. I went, really? I was like, I think the song's just okay. He said, this is going to be a big hit. And then all of a sudden, it was a big hit. And so we were able, even though we didn't write the song, we were able to kind of, you know, cash in on that and be part of the wave of the, you know, the hit that was.
That song, I mean, it was.
That's a great song.
It's such a good song. And it's just everywhere. I feel like that was like, again, it felt like to me kind of toward the end of that season of CCM where it was like bands and really celebrating really cool, unique, weird songs and bands and stuff. And it's sort of like, that was right at the tail of that for me. But I mean, what a just monster.
That's definitely a song, you know, for me, I get asked all the time, do you ever get tired of singing some of these songs over and over? Not really. When you have a song like that and you look out and and almost everybody there, even, you know, people that were not even alive at the time. When I was to look out and see teenagers now singing that song, yeah. I'm like, first of all, how do you know the song? Second of all, like, it's just amazing. It never gets old. And back to what you were saying earlier about just, you know, part of the, and I mean, this is going to sound funny, but I think we were pretty humble because it's easy to be humble when you have this kind of success. I think if we had had middle kind of tier success and had maybe one or two gold records and maybe one Grammy or whatever, it would have been like, look how great we are. But because it went so far beyond that, it was like, oh, this really doesn't have a lot to do with us.
Yeah, I totally get that. Mm-hmm. That's really well said. Really well said.
So what would you say, you know, looking back as Dave, like, read the brag sheet, and I'm sure there's, you know, there's tons and tons and tons of more experiences, obviously, in your head that you can't put down on paper. Like, what is it, if there's one thing that you're most proud of, looking back on the whole thing, what would it be? And I mean, this interview being on Dadville aside.
Yes. Yeah. Is that going to be added? That's going to be added to the list on Wikipedia. Cool. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Man, honestly, I think it really doesn't have a lot to answer that question. It's not got a lot to do with any of that stuff on the list, even though that stuff was cool. I think the thing I'm most proud of is that we, you know, remained friends for so long and we were the band.
Yeah.
We would have other people come out and play with us. Like, we didn't have an official keyboard player, but Scotty Wilbanks played keys with us for 13 years on the road and, you know, played on our records too. So that's the thing I'm most proud of, is that we were the band. What you heard on the records, what you heard live.
Yeah.
That was real. As I said earlier, good or bad. And that was what you see and what you hear is what you get. So I think that's probably what I'm most proud of.
Yeah, that is truly a rare thing. I think even really then, to some degree, like, you know, because you do some snooping around, you start hearing more of like, oh, well, you know, they didn't really play on that album. Yeah. And you're like, oh, yeah. Or like, I'll never forget how heartbreaking it was. Like, right after I moved here to Nashville, I started meeting player friends of mine. And they're like, oh, yeah, I played on that. And I was like, wait, what? They're like, oh, yeah, shoot, sorry. Yeah, sorry. Yeah, sorry.
No, you didn't. No, you didn't.
that just feeling. So, okay, so 28 number ones. Okay, this is like seismic. What is, like, what does that feel like? Can you sum up what, I mean, like, do you ever look at that yourself and go, God, that's a lot of songs?
you know, honestly, I don't think about it because I see it sounds like a lot bigger deal than it really is. And that's another part of being, you know, I love how I'm like saying, hey, guys, look how humble I am. It's hard to be humble when you're perfect in every way, right? No, it's, I'm trying to say in a nice way, I have humility because I know the truth of it.
Right. Right.
I read one time in a book, it said that all that humility is honesty.
Mm-hmm. And so, wow.
Yeah, I think I can be humble because I'm honest about what the truth is. When you look at 28 number ones, yeah, it sounds really cool. And it is cool. I'm not taking away from it. But also, it was a different day. There was like Christian rock radio and Christian CHR. There were all these formats and different stations that it was a lot easier back then to get a number one than it is now, like by far.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But what
did the arc of that feel like? I mean, it's probably hard to sum up, but I'm like, you know, you remember what the first one felt like, maybe the second, and then because you get the sophomore slump thing, maybe. But like, what does the 17th feel like? Yeah. You know what I mean?
I mean, it doesn't change. It's still, even now, like hearing, and Dave, I think you could probably speak into this truth as well. Even now, I've heard my songs on the radio, I'm not going to say millions, but a lot of times. Mm-hmm. I still, when I have a song that comes on the radio, I'll go, ooh, turn it up. I want to hear it. It's like, it's exciting still. It doesn't get old. So it's the same answer for that question, that you get a number one song, you just go, golly, thank you, Lord, that I get to still do this. Mm-hmm. My latest single went to number two. Even that was like, it didn't even go number one, but it was on the charts for like literally a year.
Wow.
And even that was like, God, I can't believe this. How do I get to still do this? You know?
Yeah. Yeah. That's so great.
I heard one time that Elton John, this was back when he did a record. He did this kind of, I'm blanking on his name now. What's the guy's, Leon Russell. He did
this record
with Leon Russell. Yep. And I remember somebody saying that, like, he's like, the day that the record came out, Elton is like checking the charts, like excited. He's like, and it was in like, back then, I think iTunes, it was like top 10 iTunes. Mm-hmm. And he was like, we're top 10. You know, it's like, it's so, it almost seems impossible that after so much success, somebody could be that, you know, excited and into it.
Well, I'm curious too, Mac. I think, like, knowing, you know, there's also at the age that you and I both are, John is still just such a young buck at 23. Yeah. But like, you know, like you're, it's second half of life stuff too now for you, because it's like, you know, you've been here for a while. There's a different, I know I feel this way at 45. Like I'm so much more grateful than I've ever been. You know, it's like you kind of, you've been through the season where you're like, yeah, it happened. And I think we're, you know, like at our ages, you're kind of like, man, this is a gift. Like, I know how hard this is.
Yeah. Oh, big time. Big time. I was talking to a new artist yesterday, and a friend wanted to introduce me to her, and she's like an up and coming country singer. And she was just like saying, you know, her and her dad sat down with me and my friend, and they said, you know, can you give her some advice? And I was like, well, tell me what you're doing. I'm so sorry. I don't have any advice for you. You're doing everything that I would tell you to do. And it's like, one thing that I said I can tell you is that the things that you're struggling with now, as far as like, how do I write a better song? And then how do I get it on radio? And how do I get more people out to the shows? Those things that you as a new artist are dealing with, that will never change. You will always have those thoughts. I said, I'm 50 years old and I'm asking the same questions. And so a thing that I figured out, and so I said that I don't want to discourage you with that. I want to encourage you with that, to go, it's okay that the spot you're in right now, the very beginning of your career, you're doing what you're supposed to be doing, but it's never going to change. And the thing that I learned a few years ago was that you're never going to figure it out, but you never stop trying to figure it out.
Yeah.
I know that sounds like a Yoda-ism kind of, but it's like, you're never going to get to a place where you go, I got it. I know how to write a good song. Yeah. I know how to get, you know, a perfect set list in the show. I know how to not have to like struggle with trying to sell tickets to a show or sell records or whatever. You're always going to have those things. You're never going to figure it out. But at the same time, you never stop trying to figure it out. I hope that makes sense.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
And I may have cried a little bit.
Definitely true. It's funny when you say the set list thing, I'm like, man, that is true. I feel like I have a hometown show next week, and I'm like, I've been working on this set list for like a month. I always feel like I can't do it. I don't know how to do it. Yeah. I'm going to lose the audience every time. Anyway.
Right. No, it's true. It's true. And that was one of the things I would get. So I remember specifically having a meeting with Third Day. It was us and our management, and we were about 10 or 12 years in to like being signed. So we've been doing this for a minute. Right. And we're asking all these questions, and I was so mad. I was like, why are we asking the same questions now that we asked when we were brand new?
Yeah.
And I was so mad about it. And then I went, you know what? That's when it really hit me. I was like, oh, we're not going to ever figure it out. Yeah. That's okay.
Right. Yeah. Like, this is the way it goes. We're doing it right.
I thought about this yesterday, because I just announced tour dates this week for next year. And I was like, I'm 45. I've done this for 20. I've been doing this for 20 years now, 20 plus years. And I still feel two things. Nobody's going to show up. And the people that do, it was an accident. Yeah. Like, I'm 21. Still.
How can I still trick them into coming out or listening? Yes.
I feel like when I walk out on stage, there's a couple. There are a dozen people who wanted to be there. The rest, I don't know. Somehow, it doesn't make any logical sense.
They dragged all their friends
They dragged 20 of their friends. Each of them.
They're looking at their watch going, when is this going to be over with? We've got reservations
Oh, man.
We got somewhere to be.
All right. So, Mac, you have 5 kids. Is that correct?
That is correct.
We've been researching this all morning.
Wikipedia is correct on that one.
Okay. So, how many...
do I love?
How many kids is 2 kids?
3 out of 5. I love
how many do I love?
5 kids. Okay.
What was the question?
The question is, how many kids is too many kids?
Probably 5.
Do you feel like, I have a theory on this. I have 2 kids. Dave has 3 kids.
Yeah.
My brother has 5 kids. You know, I feel like anyone who has 1 more kid than you have is crazy.
Yes.
Do you feel that way about people who have 6 kids?
You're like, I do. 6? I do. Somebody said something to me yesterday about having 6 kids, and I'm like, 6 kids? That's crazy. And I went, oh, it's just 1 more. I think that you kind of figure it out. You know, they're really, honestly, when we adopted our 2 youngest ones. So we went from within a matter of a year, we went from 3 to 5 really quick. Yeah. And yes, it is more work, but you just kind of go, yeah, is it really a lot different than having 3? No, it's not.
Right. Right. Once you're outnumbered, you're outnumbered.
Yeah.
That's true.
Drive, which helps a lot.
Oh yeah. Yeah. So what's the age spread? What's the oldest and the
youngest? So my oldest is now 24, and she Scout is her name, and Scout got married about a year ago, a little bit over a year ago. She plays bass for me, so she's out on the
No way.
Scout's my bass player. Her husband
is
my
drummer. Dream.
No. Hold on. Your rhythm section is your daughter and your son-in-law.
Yes, correct.
That is amazing.
That is the dream.
That is the dream.
And neither one of them can cut hair is what you're saying.
I haven't tried that yet.
What if you're like, and Dave, they're terrible, but the hang is so good.
Yeah, but the tracks sound great.
Oh, my gosh. He doesn't even have drumsticks. He's just hitting them with his hands.
Oh, I play drums.
What is that like?
It's great, man. I mean, honestly, Scout and I, we've always been really close. Mm. And she's really one of my best friends in life.
Jeez.
I really normally hate it when people say that their kids are their best friends, but she's at an age where, you know, she's not a kid anymore.
Yeah.
Right.
So it's like
choosing to be your friend at this
age. Yeah. And it's really, there are times when we're on the road and I'm off reading or whatever by myself, and she's like, Papa, come hang with us. And so when you've got your daughter wanting you to go hang out with her,
jeez Louise, really cool. Man.
The dream.
Can you tell us how you did that? What is the secret to that?
I'm imagining the scenario. Oh wait, I'm going back to the bass gig. I'm like, I'm imagining she's playing bass and she's like, I'd love to play for you. And you're like,
No.
I might need a couple more years. Or did it happen the other way?
Yeah, she's been ever since she was in high school. She was in a trio where she's the front woman playing bass. So there was a drummer, her on bass singing lead, and a guitar player. And so she did that for years. And so I knew she could do it. I knew she could handle it. And really, when she married this drummer, I often say this joke on stage when I'm introducing them. I'll say when he asked for her hand in marriage, I was like, I got to keep my eye on this guy. And what do you do? What skills do you have? And he's like, I don't know. I don't have any skills. I'm like, well, just play drums. How hard can that be?
Zinger.
But everybody, you know, he's been playing drums since he was 5 or whatever. But everybody thinks that he really just started like a year ago. Wow, he's pretty good.
It's pretty good for a year ago.
I guess drums is easy.
But how do you, but how do you, I mean, I don't know if there's anything that John and I want to know more in life than how do you get your kids to like you at that age
in adulthood?
Life? Do you have any roadmap? Is there any breadcrumbs for those of us who are years behind you?
Were there times where, you know, were there years where you were like,
it's tricky,
he's never going to even talk to me again?
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's definitely my youngest son who is 14 now. He was like my best friend for you know, ever since he was born until about a year ago. It was like, this is my guy. This is my mini me. And mm-hmm. he is like always wanting to be around me. He, up until like, honestly, a year and a half ago, he would hold my hand. Like we'd walk mm-hmm. into, get out of the car to walk into a grocery store, and he's 13 holding my hand. But now it's like, what's up, Dad? So it changes for like, you know, it changes, but hopefully it'll come back.
Yeah. Maybe cigarettes, Dad.
What?
Want to smoke?
Hey, you cool if I do a self-tat?
What?
And my oldest, I've got two girls, and my oldest is about to turn 11. And she's going around the dark side. I can see it.
You can
just
feel
like
it.
Not quite as just so, there so with me all
this,
the time.
This is, to John's point, Mac, I really do want your wisdom on this. For those of us like me and John, you know, I have 11 and down. John, like you said, is 10 and down. 10 and down, right, John? About to be 11? Where is she?
About to be 11, yeah.
About to be 11. You know, for those of us like John, where you can feel, John, that's such a good way, you can feel the eclipse. Yeah. you sort of see the shadow overtaking.
Yeah.
You know, what is the word there? Like, because again, I just can't, it's so cool to hear you say that. I love that she wants to be with you. She's mm-hmm. at an age where she's volitionally, like she is making that decision. You're not right. shaming her into it. You're not like right. jobbing her into it. You know, now right. she plays for you. You know, knowing that, like you said, there was a rough patch too, which I think every parent knows very intimately.
Right. Yeah.
What, how did you navigate that? How do you look at it now? How did you come out of that? Like, what is your posture with them now?
And I know it probably sounds like a joke when I say it, but I'm all serious when I say it. It's like a lot of prayer, man. There's a lot of prayer that goes into it.
What still, else? What's something that's easier?
Yeah. I think just. It was like the other day we were doing the very first show of this Christmas tour with Natalie Grant and Danny Gokey and me and my band. And we had all these people and a guy from the tour was like, hey, let's gather up and pray. I was like, yeah, that's such good luck. Let's do that.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, it starts to thunder immediately.
Yeah. No, but prayer is definitely a big part of it. And we're still going through that as parents, you know, whether they mm-hmm. – and Amy, my wife, says this a lot. Like, it's sometimes it's harder being parenting an adult than it is a kid.
Okay. No doubt. I can't imagine.
That's not always the case, but there's some truth in that, too. But, you know, it's just kind of working. I don't know if I can give you any advice that's not common sense that people aren't trying anyway. It's just like you don't give up. You don't give up, and you just have grace and mercy as our parents did for us, and you're just hanging there with them, you know, and a lot of prayer and a lot of just loving them through those mistakes, because we made a lot of those mistakes, and were it not for God's grace, we would have made a lot more. Mm-hmm. And so I think it's just, you know, continuing to love them, and they see that, and they know that, and they feel that, and then they want to be better, just like we do, you know, as parents.
Dad Phil.
Dadville is sponsored by BetterHelp.
John.
Dave.
How does your family approach giving gifts for the holidays? Do you do presents, cards, experiences, donations, or just focus on enjoying time together?
That's a great question, Dave. Yeah, I mean, we do love giving presents, mm-hmm. but I'd say, you know, a combination of all the things you mentioned.
Oh, nice.
Probably is the answer. The most important gift is the time we get to spend together, though.
I agree, my friend. And you know, at the holidays, mm-hmm. it's okay to give yourself a gift, too. And
that's right.
You get to define how you give one to yourself. So whether it's by going easy on yourself during tough moments, which quite a few of those during the holidays, giving yourself a day of complete rest, which is hard to get in the holidays, or starting therapy, remember to give yourself some love this holiday season.
That's right. I think therapy is a great way to give to yourself. Therapy is so helpful. It teaches coping skills, helps you set boundaries, and it empowers you to be the best version of yourself.
You couldn't be more right, John. And it isn't just for those who experience trauma. It can benefit anyone.
If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge.
Get a break from your thoughts with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/Dadville today to get 10% off your first month.
That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/Dadville.
Man.
Dave, Louise, yeah. I want to give a shout out. And when I give a shout out, I always laugh because it just brings me so much joy to give a shout out to Claritin for supporting this episode and providing us with free samples.
You know it, John. This time of year, my allergies are in fuego. They're always on the attack, but I use this and you should too.
Oh, I do, Dave. Every day in our house. Yeah. Luckily, for those of us who live with the symptoms of allergies, we can live Claritin Clear with Claritin D.
Designed for serious allergy sufferers, which is, me raising my hand, Claritin D has two powerful ingredients in just one pill to relieve your allergy symptoms and decongest your nose so you can breathe better.
This double-action combination of prescription-strength allergy medicine and the best decongestant available relieves sneezing, runny nose, itchy and watery eyes, and itchy nose and throat and sinus congestion and pressure with ease.
John, I've been taking Claritin D for my allergies for a long time, and it's been an absolute life changer. I can go for a run without my eyes watering. I may be crying, but it's not from allergies.
Totally different.
And I can sing without feeling like I have like a big old, let's not even call it a frog. It's like a toad.
It's like a family of toads.
It's a family. It's a turtle.
Yeah.
In my throat.
So, you ready to live life as if you don't have allergies?
Yeah, me.
It's time to live Claritin Clear. Fast and powerful relief is just a quick trip away. Find Claritin D at the pharmacy counter.
Ask for Claritin D at your local pharmacy counter. You don't even need a prescription. Go to Claritin.com right now for a discount so you can live Claritin Clear. Use as directed.
What
did it look like in those seasons, especially as they get older? You know, how much are you letting them in on vulnerability? Hopefully some, obviously, because, you know, you want that connection with it. But how, what did it look like as she was growing, especially your older ones? Mm-hmm. And how much are you really kind of going, hey, this is what I'm struggling with you right now, or this is what's hard. And then what are you not telling them? Like how, and I'm sure it's case to case basis, but what does that look like?
Yeah. It's definitely it's a lot of times you have to be intentional with those set down. All right, look, we're going to sit down right now. We're going to talk through it. There are times where you just kind of let things slide. And then, there's, of course, there's a point where you have to be intentional and go, this is why your mother and I are feeling this way. We have fear because you're doing this, or we have anxiety because you're doing this. And we see where that's going. And you can't necessarily understand, but we've been around the block a few times and we know what this normally leads to.
Wow.
And it's not good. And so, but it's hard. It's hard because they have to live their own lives at the same time. But hopefully they respect you enough to, at least, even if they disagree, to understand that the reason you're sitting down with them and trying to talk through these things with them is because you do care.
What got you to the adoption journey? Like, what did that look like? How did y'all decide to do that? And
I went to a freaking Stephen Curtis Chapman concert.
No way.
And he would not shut up about it.
That'll do it. That'll do it.
And showed this video and I was like, all right, I'm in.
Really?
So
you know what? That's half a joke, but there is a lot of truth to that. I don't know if you guys are, I think you guys know my friend, David Nasser, who lives in Nashville.
Oh yeah. We love David. And we've had him on the pod.
Yeah. So David, we're
probably him texting you.
Yeah, that's him. Really close. We've been around, been friends for a long time. He and Jennifer adopted Rudy when Rudy was maybe 5 or 6 years old when they got him. And man, we just fell in love with Rudy and him being part of the family, and just saw the love that the Nassers had for this little boy from Guatemala. And, you know, it just was a great reflection of God's love for us and adopting and bringing us into his family. And we saw firsthand the beauty of adoption. And that was the beginnings. And of course, Stephen, I joked about Stephen a moment ago, but with him adopting his girls, you know, that was such a great, another great example to us of how beautiful this whole thing is. Now, I don't really get on a soapbox preaching about adoption, because I also have seen the hardships that can come through adoption, especially sometimes when people adopt older kids. Ours has been great, as it's worked out beautiful, and I wouldn't change a thing about it. However, it is tough for some families. And so, you know, I'm just very thankful. I mean, our two youngest, You guys are trying to pull an Oprah on me, aren't you? You're trying to get me to cry.
We're trying.
It's a beautiful thing, man. It's been such a blessing. Thank you for the adoption
key. Key of F sharp, the adoption key.
The saddest of all keys. Anyway, it's just a beautiful thing, and I'm so thankful for our little ones, and just not only seeing how it's affected me and Amy, but for our biological children, just seeing the love that they have for their brother and sister. And I think the one of the greatest myths in life, that even though I know there are hard struggles, I mean, I've seen it with friends, struggles with adoption. I think that the myth I try to bust is that when we were adopting Emmanuel for our first adoption, I realized, this sounds terrible saying it out loud, but I'm just going to be honest with you. I thought, man, I love my children, my biological children so much. There's no way possible I could love this adopted kid as much. It's just not going to happen. But you know what? I'll love them 80, 85%. And that's good, right? That's a good. And that just was thrown out the window like instantly. Mm-hmm. I soon realized, and I was telling my mentor, a guy named Tim Cash in Atlanta, I remember being on the road. I was in Houston, Texas, doing a show, and he had called me. And after a few months into adopting Emmanuel, he said, "You know, how's it going?" I said, "Tim, I don't know how to tell you this. It's like I don't want to say that I love him more than my biological kids, but there's something deeper." Mm. He told me this great story. He said, "Back in Old Testament times, in the Jewish culture, you could, if you were an adult and you didn't agree with." With your kids and how they were living, the older kids, you could actually divorce your kids. You could just write up a paper and say, "I have no more, you're not in my family. I have no responsibility for you anymore." He said, but if you adopted, the law was, if you adopted someone, you couldn't do that. You couldn't divorce them. He said, so there's this connection.
Wow.
When Paul talks about in the first chapter of Ephesians that we've been adopted into God's family, that's so much, that means so much more than our Western minds know.
Yeah.
What it meant was there's nothing that you can do where God's going to say, "You're not part of my family anymore."
Jeez.
Wow.
And so when he told me that, I went, man, there's just something. It's a beautiful, beautiful thing that God's allowed us to have in adoption.
That's really cool.
Incredible.
I did not know that. So is there anything, Dave and I both have some close friends who have adopted kids, and, you know, like anything, if it's not your experience, there's nuances to everything that you wouldn't know. And one of my best friends all growing up is Korean. And a couple of years ago, you know, back in 2020, when, you know, race was top of mind, it still is obviously, but you know, when all that was happening, there were things that, that my buddy told me that I was like, "We've been friends since fifth grade. I never knew this about your experience," you know?
Yeah.
And so I think it's so helpful and important for everyone to put ourselves in each other's shoes as much as we can. Is there anything that you now, having five kids, two of them adopted, a different race, is there anything that you're like, if I could tell the whole world, like, hey, just FYI, this is part of our experience. I wish the whole world knew this.
Wow. Yeah.
Is there anything that comes to mind?
Yeah. Well, I'll say two things. I would add to what I just talked about of just knowing, to me, my two younger kids that are adopted, they're both African American. You get to a place where I don't think about them being black. Now, at the same time, you know they are. You think about, you know, how are they going to deal the older they get, especially they're getting to the age now where I always knew when we adopted them, this is going to be easier earlier on than it is later on.
Wow.
I know that once, because I've experienced that through friends that had adopted kids from different races, that, you know, they once they get to high school, there's kids start asking questions and all this stuff. And then I see that in my son. My son, the other day, we saw one of those, what's the the 23andMe. What's that?
Oh, yeah.
Where you can check your family background.
Yep.
He saw a commercial. He's like, I want to do that. I want to know about my family. I want to know about the family. And so, you know, he's always asked those kind of questions ever since he was little. My daughter, Bertie Claire, like, she's like, this is my family. I don't care. Now that may change. Mm-hmm. You know, she's only in the eighth grade now. So that may change the older she gets. Mm-hmm. So yeah, John, to what you're saying, there's definitely things that, we're going to still deal with for a number, you know, really the rest of their lives. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I remember seeing Amy and I loved, the show, This Is Us. I mean, it was, and in that, if you're not familiar with that show, there were three siblings, and one of them, there was a white male, a white female, and the third triplet, if you will, was black. And so that show did a beautiful job of kind of explaining some of the questions that young man had, you know, and how he didn't ever feel completely part of the family, even though he was, and the struggles that come up. We would cry almost every episode watching that show, This Is Us, because we knew this is the future of our son and daughter, these questions and these, you know, these fears and all those things. So, yeah, that goes back to what I was saying earlier. Adoption is a beautiful, beautiful thing, but there's a lot of pain and questions and struggles that come with it as well.
One of the things
that's going to happen with just kids in general anyway, whether they're biological or adopted. So as a parent, you're just going to have to deal with those things. So there's no there that shouldn't give people a reason to go, well, I'm just not doing that then.
Yeah. One of the things that is so particular that, you know, set up as a family with different races involved is that they don't, you know, where if you had adopted white kids, they could live their whole life if you chose to and never know that, you know what I mean? And never know they were adopted. You know, with kids of a different race, that's not the truth. And so it's such a it fascinates me so much to think about that they so young know. And so there's probably bonuses to that and that you don't ever have to sit down and be like, hey, so this is kind of what happened. Yeah. But there's also this thing, like you said, they've always known that.
Yes.
Absolutely. And it's informed their entire childhood.
Right. Well, and one of the things, we had to go to these classes before you adopt. You have to go to, well, we adopted through Bethany Christian Services, which was a great organization. I highly recommend them. But we had to go to a certain number of classes to kind of, you know, raise those questions and think about those things. And one of the things that they said is, like, if you ever think about, as the parent, if you ever wonder something about your child's bio parents or their life or whatever, your child is going to do it 1,000-fold. Wow. So if you're thinking of those things, you got to know, guaranteed, they're thinking about them even more. So it is something you have to have a lot of conversation about.
Yeah, that is fascinating. So one more thing I want to ask before we release you back to the wolves. What did it look like as you were having kids with your career? Like, how did y'all manage that as parents? Like, how did you manage that as, you know, playing shows, being studio writing, whatever that looked like? Yeah. And then how did both of y'all navigate that?
Yeah, it's we went through different seasons. I mean, when Third Day first got signed, all five of us in the band had gotten married within a period of 6 months before getting signed and six months after. And then we got, like, I got married. The record came out in the spring of 96. I got married in the end of July of 96, went on my honeymoon, and then I was gone for about 90 days.
I was home,
I think, 5 or 6 days within a 3-month period.
Jeez.
And so that was a big, like, Amy was like, I did not sign up for this. And people always say, well, you know what you're getting into. You don't. You have no idea. Yeah. Even when you're getting married and nobody's going on the road, you have no idea. You think you know, but you have no idea what you're getting into. And so for us, we got to a point where it was like, I have to have my wife on the road. So she came out on the road. Then she had Scout. And it was like, man, it's going to be tough having a baby on the road, but that's what we've got to do. Then once Scout got a little bit older, then they stayed at home and we had Cash, our second child. Then it was like, okay, it's too much. It's easier for the family to be at home. So we went through these different seasons of people being on the road, not being on the road. For us, I really got to a point where I realized, and all of us in Third Day did this, is that when I was, we always said this, when you're home, be home. So all of us, like, when people ask me, hey, when you go to coffee with somebody, where do you go? I'm like, I don't go to coffee with people.
Wow.
When I'm home, I'm home. You know, and that's not 100% true. There are times I'll meet somebody for breakfast or whatever, but that's if the kids are gone and Amy's doing something. Like, you have to be very intentional about your planning stuff. Like, when I'm at home, like, I'm not going to go to a ball game unless I've got my family with me. Mm. You know, so I'm not just going to go out with the guys. I just can't.
Yeah.
And that's okay, because I get that time, a lot of that time on the road.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Go to a ball game, go to a movie, kind of have my me time. When I'm on the road, there's a lot. Wow. So when I'm home, I'm home. When I'm on the road is when I do all that other stuff.
Yeah, that's well said.
All right. So we're going to end the interview with a little speed round. All right.
Love speed round.
Just first thing that comes to your mind. Yes. I'll ask the first question. If the whole world could stop and listen to one Third Day song, one Mac Powell song, what would those songs be?
Oh, gosh. I would say... Third Day song would be, I don't know. There's so many to list. I would say there's a song called, Cry Out to Jesus that I really love, because it's really, you know, the heart of why we did what we did, wanting people to know this amazing grace and love that God has for them. That song came about from, this is speed round. I shouldn't go into all the details, but anyway, that song came about from a lot of struggles and things that we were going through as a band and as family members and that our friends were going through. So it's really a kind of a song for everybody, no matter where you are in life. So Cry Out to Jesus, I would say. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Buckle up for this one, my man. You thought you were going to get through this one easy. Was there another name that Third Day was almost called? Okay. or what would you change it to now if you had to?
Okay. Before it was, you know, of course you said the name earlier, Nuclear Hoedown was the first one.
Just unbelievable.
We went through a long list of, you know, when you're a young Christian and you're like so excited about your faith.
Oh, bro.
And we had a long list of just terrible names, like whatever, Jacob's Well. And it's always like a biblical person and a thing.
A thing that they own.
Yeah. Joseph's coat.
Yeah, stupid stuff.
Joseph's jacket.
My favorite was the name and the emotion. That's when you were really into it. Like, you know, Esau's regret. Or like, you know, Jacob's loneliness. You're always like, oh.
That's good. Jesus wept.
Yeah, Jesus's tears.
Yeah. All right. This is a big one. I don't know if this is going to be possible.
If you can do this, I'm going to stand and applaud. Okay.
Again, this is speed round, and it doesn't have to be in the order, but you get bonus points. We'll have you on five more times if you get all these in order.
Right.
You have 1 minute.
You don't want to do.
Yeah. I take that back. You have 1 minute to name all 28 number one songs.
Do you think you could even do that?
You get 10? I couldn't name five.
That is amazing. I love that.
That is so healthy, Mac.
Yeah,
You're so healthy. You have 28 number one.
If your eyes had rolled
back
and all we saw was white and you named them that fast, I would be amazed and so worried.
And the date that they came out.
Right.
or the day they went number one. That would be the most troubling thing.
I'm going to freaking Rain Man on y'all.
Yeah, you're like, okay, let's start at the top. You want alphabetical or the year they were released or how much I like?
No, I'll just do both.
Let's do week on the chart too. Here we go. Let's start. Okay, so finally, if you wrote a book on fatherhood, have you written a book on fatherhood?
I've not written a book on fatherhood, but a little selfish plug here. I did write a book with a friend of mine. It just came out, meaning we just released it. It's not in stores or anything. You can get it on Amazon.com and just at my shows. It's called The Soul Shines Through.
Wow.
I wrote a book with a good friend about four different painters and their spiritual lives.
Whoa.
So Andy Warhol, Mark Chagall, Vincent van Gogh and Pablo Picasso. I'll give you a really quick little Did you know that Vincent van Gogh, his dad was a pastor. His grandfather was a pastor. He wanted to follow in their footsteps. And he went to seminary, applied, got in. While he was in seminary, he was a missionary in Belgium. He did a radical thing.
What?
He sold everything that he had. This Vincent van Gogh, arguably the most famous painter of all time, sold everything that he had. He loved Jesus, loved people, gave it away to all the people in this town where he was a missionary. The people who ran the seminary thought they were like, that's too radical. You can't do that. And they kicked him out because he spent so much time with them, loved on them.
They're like, you're too much like Jesus.
That's
too close.
Broke his heart. So he said, I don't know what I'm going to do in life. His brother, Theo, sold paintings in Paris. So he said, hey, well, I'll give you a little stipend every month. You go paint. Just learn how to paint and do that. So he died.
You're being serious.
No, I'm serious. This
like,
is in my
go
book.
Learn how to paint because you don't know what to do.
He didn't know what to do. So he started drawing at 29. Then he learned how to paint or tried to learn how to paint. He died penniless. He'd sold one painting his whole life. Nobody knew who he was. And so there's a lot more to the story. If you go get my book, you'll find out more. But those kinds of stories, Andy Warhol, you know, who's just this wild, crazy artist, grew up in the Eastern Orthodox Church. When he died, he had a prayer journal a prayer book by his bedside table. He went to mass every week, served in soup kitchens in New York City. So, there was a lot of wild stuff. Now, I don't try to make these guys spiritual giants by any means, but what we tried, me and my friend who wrote the book together with me, we're just trying to show there was spirituality in these guys and in their lives. It affected them and their art, in which their art affected so many other people. So anyway, go check it out.
That's amazing.
I am 100% reading this book. That sounds fascinating.
Yeah.
So if you wrote a book on fatherhood, now that you are an author, what would you call it?
Oh, crap. I'm a dad. Oh, crap. What do I do now?
Oh, crap. And other wisdoms from Mac Powell.
Oh, my gosh.
Can I say oh crap on your podcast?
You can.
We'll edit it. We'll fix it.
Yes. So, so before we let you go, anything, I mean, I we want you to plug the things cause you have the book, The Soul Shines Through, anything else you want to tell the people about?
No, just, I don't know when this comes out, but I just put out a Christmas EP, very creative with the title. It's called Christmas.
Love that. Love that. And what's it about?
It's an Easter record. I told you the other day, Dave, I was looking for songs. I'm like, what can I record that, what's a Christmas song? I want to find something that is just new and creative, that, you know, it's not the same old Christmas thing that I've heard. And I found this Harry Connick Jr. song called I Pray on Christmas, and I heard a couple of versions of it. And as I was studying more about that song, I saw that Dave had a version, and which I love your version of it.
It's one of the greatest Christmas songs of all time.
It's so cool, man. I actually want it. You probably did this too. I was like, I got to get him on this. I want him to sing on it. No response.
Yeah. He is John and I, he is the elusive, he's the Moby Dick. It's like we want him. I mean, he is
we're gonna get both of
our favorites. Yeah, we'll get him. But it's like,
Harry, he's on the listening.
He's an avid, we can just feel that he's an avid listener. So now it's just about getting him. One of my favorite moments of like Twitter online social platforms is he has this famous video now, but it's time not a lot of people knew it, but it's the coolest thing. He's playing in London.
I know what you're going to say.
Where he swaps from the clapping because it's five bar. Yeah. And I retweeted it and just said, like, you know, this is why this man is a genius. This was like a decade ago. And he replied to it and said, so glad you noticed and retweeted it. And I was like, this is the beginning to us becoming best friends and vacationing together.
Yes.
It didn't actually lead that way, sadly.
That's when you started the podcast with that day.
This is how this so is the siren talk. Song.
And let's be honest. That's Harry's loss. That's his loss.
Thank you. Oddly enough, is any of our Christian band. So nailed it.
We're out of here.